Yes.
Thank you very much. We're going to call to order the meeting for the CVAG Executive Committee meeting for Monday, June 7th at 4:30. Can we have a roll call, please?
Blythe? He's here.
Here.
Thank you. Cathedral City?
Here.
Coachella?
Here. Hey.
Thank you, Joey. Coachella? Desert Hot Springs?
Present.
Indian Wells?
Present.
Indio?
Present.
La Quinta?
Present.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs?
Here.
Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County 4th District?
Here.
Agua Caliente? Cabazon?
Here.
And Torres Martinez?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Pursuant to the governor's Newsom's executive order, we're able to have this meeting, and we're going to be conducting it by video and teleconference only. And with that, we'll move on to the Pledge of Allegiance. And if Mr. Mattis can lead us, sir, that would be appreciated.
Can figure out how to work it here. Please rise. Join me in pledging to our nation's flag. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Mattis. Appreciate that. And with that, we'll move on to item four, which is public comments on agenda items. Joanna, do we have anybody that sent anything or anybody in the queue that'd like to speak?
We have not received any written comments, and I do not see any raised hands.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll move on to item five, which is the Chair Executive Director announcements. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Kirk. Lead us away, sir.
Yeah, I was actually going to start by apologizing to those of you that also sit on the Transportation Committee, because my report was going to be virtually the same as it was earlier this morning when Mayor Mattis led the Transportation Committee agenda. But in the intervening few hours, we've actually had a bit of new information, so I'll pass that along as well. The first thing I want to do is update you on CV Link, and Erica, if you can share our screen. We are, of course, under construction throughout the Coachella Valley and Palm Desert. There's been some substantial progress made. Go ahead. This is Magnesia Falls from a few days ago, and shortly it will turn into this. And at Bump and Grind, which is one of the most heavily used trail in the Coachella Valley, we're connecting our street CV Link system to the hiking trails. And this is an artist rendering, and this is progress to date. This is actually from a couple weeks ago as well. And even in the last week or two, we've had shade structures put up, and you're gonna see a lot of activity in the coming weeks. We expect construction to be done before the end of summer. Additionally, we of course are under construction throughout the eastern part of the Coachella Valley right now as well. We'll be in Palm Springs later this summer too. And here is the pier structure that's being built to create a bridge between Indio and La Quinta. I know some of you are obviously out there for the groundbreaking ceremony. I just got word from our construction management team earlier today that they'll be out at 6:30 in the morning pouring the concrete for one of the abutments and another pier out there. So there's a lot of activity going on at that project location. Another quick update, active transportation project. And the Transportation Committee got to hear my really good news on this front earlier today. The governor's budget includes an additional $500 million for active transportation projects. And you might remember that we've done pretty well in the Coachella Valley with ATP dollars. CVAG got a bunch of money, Coachella's gotten money, La Quinta's gotten money, Palm Desert received a fair amount of money for San Pablo. So we have this one transportation program that we are outperforming probably the rest of the state, and we may continue to do so. You might remember that we did some initial planning. CVAG made an investment with Cathedral City, Desert Hot Springs, and La Quinta, Indio, and Coachella on a number of project applications. We actually did initial design. We spent millions of dollars on design. And when the ATP awards came out about 6 months ago, we got modestly good news. We were told that we got awarded in Cathedral City. The arts and music line, you might remember Mayor Evans and others. We were told we would be awarded $6.9 million, but we really needed $17 or $18 million. So we decided to forego that, which was good news for Desert Hot Springs, which got some money for work in its downtown. But of course, we wanted some bigger dollars in the future on the arts and music line. So we made an agreement with RCTC that if there was more money in the governor's budget, we would be in line for that money. And sure enough, with $500 million more in the governor's budget, two projects will be funded very likely. And those two projects are, next, an extension of CV Link into Desert Hot Springs. Chair Mattis, Mayor Mattis, you've been waiting for this for a long, long time. Getting to Desert Hot Springs from Palm Springs on a bike is a challenge. And even with CV Link, it'll be a challenge during the windy part of the year, but it'll be made a lot easier and safer by running a dedicated lane or two up Palm Drive into the heart of Desert Hot Springs. This is a $30 million request from the state of California, to the state of California, with Desert Hot Springs and CVAG support. And it's likely the state is going to fund this. And I want to repeat, $30 million. Out of a total pot for the state of $500 million. It's off the charts. Additionally, next slides, arts and music line. We're gonna do some special things to connect the main part of CV Link into the festival grounds and connect the cities of Coachella, Indio, and La Quinta. Next slide. And as I mentioned before, we had asked for close to $18 million. Decided not to accept a smaller award because that meant Coachella, Indio, La Quinta, and CVAG would have to pick up the difference. And it was a wise decision. The governor's budget would provide $18 million, actually $17 million for the arts and music line. It's huge. And so you combine Desert Hot Springs award with this one, we're talking about close to $47 million for the Coachella Valley out of a total pot of $500 million. So our little Coachella Valley may get 10% of all the money in the governor's budget for ATP, the extra money. It is huge. On another front, we can stop screen sharing. On another front, I did want to update you on other things going on in the governor's budget. Lift to Rise, as you know, is being very active on setting up its housing fund, its catalyst fund. And they've been working with the governor's office to get a direct allocation of $25 million. The governor's office said initially, we're going to route a bunch of housing money called REAP through SCAG. And I know some of you are SCAG representatives. And Lift to Rise and our representatives, Assemblyman Garcia and Assemblyman Mays, were concerned about money going through Southern California to potentially get out to Lift to Rise. So Lift to Rise, working with those two assemblymen, seems to have convinced the governor's office to provide a direct allocation to CVAG for Lift to Rise. Obviously, if that were to happen, that would be an agenda item for your consideration, maybe as soon as the end of June. We assure when the governor's office asked, you know, who is this CVAG, Lift to Rise and our assemblymen got to remind them that CVAG is a smaller organization than SCAG in some ways, but our budget is about twice as large. SCAG is a huge planning organization and CVAG is an organization that is used to funding projects and programs, and we certainly have the fiscal wherewithal to handle that kind of funding. So you're going to hear more about that as well. And new information, and as Chairman Miller knows, this information is all of 5 hours, 6 hours old. You might remember we all worked with Congressman Ruiz on earmarks or community projects. Good news is it appears that the House has woven in $20 million for Monroe Interchange. And Monroe Interchange is a priority in our system. In fact, it's the number one ranked project in CVAG's TPPS. So having $20 million for that project goes a long way towards completing it. So congratulations to Indio for getting this far. The check hasn't been sent, but it sure looks promising that that money will come into the valley. Additionally, we have a Green for Life report in your agenda packet. I encourage you to take a look at it sometime. A lot of good things have been done by the cities and the Agua Caliente tribe over the last 10 years on Green for Life and reducing energy consumption and cost. With that, I think that's the extent of my good news. And in fact, it's really great news on all this transportation funding coming to the Coachella Valley. And as your transportation committee discussed earlier today, our bigger challenge might be to find contractors to get all this work done. Thank you, Chair.
Good problem to have. Thank you for the great information, Tom, and for everyone that worked on behalf of our valley to continue to get these grants and for the representatives that have helped us get them. So thank you to all of them. Just a quick question, Tom. Can you give me an update on 29 Palms, where that sits and what we've got going on with them? And let the record reflect that also Mayor Hernandez from Coachella and Chairman Gruby from the Agua Caliente are with us also, so that let the record reflect.
Yeah, I will. And you might remember the CVAG Executive Committee took action on this close to 2 months ago. And the paperwork is being routed through each of the member agencies. And that takes longer than it sometimes should. But you'll see, if you haven't already seen it or you haven't done so, please ask that the amendments to CVAG's JPA be placed on your consent calendar or on your action agenda. And as soon as I believe, and Mike Jenkins could correct me if I'm wrong, I believe as soon as 2/3 of the cities, tribes, and county at CVAG approve the JPA, they become members. We're essentially listing them as members beginning July 1st, but if it happens sooner than that, you'll see them joining you at the next meeting.
Appreciate it. Thank you for the update, Mr. Kirk. And then with that, if there's no more, anything else? No? Okay, then we'll move on to item 6, which is the consent calendar, which is item A through I. Is there anyone that would like to pull an item to discuss, or would somebody like to make a motion?
La Quinta, move approval.
Okay, we got a first by La Quinta. Do we have a second?
Second by Torres Martinez.
All right, second by Torres Martinez. Can we have a all in favor vote? Say aye.
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 Anybody opposed or abstain on any of them? All right, passes unanimously. Thank you very much. We'll move on to item number 7 now, which is action discussion for the presentation for the California redistricting process and the redrawing of legislative districts. We have about a 10 to 15 minute presentation. And there you are, Mr. Kennedy. Do you want to go ahead and take it away? Or Tom, would you like to introduce him? How would you like to do this?
He could introduce himself. Welcome. And the floor, even virtual one, is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you very much, everyone, for being here and for giving me this opportunity. Look forward to hearing from all of you and all of your citizens and members and residents as we move forward through this process. I'm Ray Kennedy. I'm one of the 14 commissioners that was selected last year to sit on this year's California Citizens Redistricting Commission. It was a long process, started nearly 2 years ago, or more than 2 years ago, and resulted in this group of 14. The purpose of this presentation is to just go over who and what the commission is, what we do, and how you and your residents and members can get involved in the process. Next slide. Just a reminder, California government code prohibits us from taking input at these educational sessions. I will be able to answer any questions about the presentation or any basic questions about the redistricting process, but cannot take any input about the lines that we will be drawing. Next slide. What is redistricting and why we redraw district maps? We're just defining redistricting as drawing new boundaries that determine which voters are represented by each electoral district, just to keep things simple. I can't tell you how many people have said, just leave my district the way it is. I like it. Well, that might be nice, but communities change over the course of 10 years. They change in their interests and priorities. People are born, people die, people move in, people move out. Areas where there were once roughly the same number of people become unequal. So we have to redraw the maps. Next slide. The road to fair representation has a number of steps. Every 10 years, the entire US population is counted. That's the data that are used to draw new maps to account for population shifts, both across state lines as well as within states. You may recall about almost 8 weeks ago now, the release of the apportionment data from the Census Bureau that gave us the total population of the US as well as the total population of the states. That allowed the reapportionment process. Those numbers go into a formula and the formula spits out how many seats each state gets in the US House of Representatives. California did not grow as fast as other states during the last 10 years and will return to the 52 seats in the US House that we had, I believe, at the 1990 census. So we're still waiting for the redistricting data. We do not know for sure when we'll get the redistricting data. Once we have that redistricting data, we will be off and running drawing our preliminary draft maps. In the meantime, we're taking best possible advantage of the time that we have to do these educational presentations. We're also launching this week our communities of interest input sessions. So we'll be talking about that more in just a little bit. Next slide. So the California Constitution sets out six criteria for us when we are drawing the maps. And not only do we have to follow these criteria, we have to follow them in this order. So first of all, districts must be of nearly equal population to comply with US Constitution and various Supreme Court rulings based on the Constitution. Second, districts must comply with the Voting Rights Act to ensure that minorities have a fair opportunity to elect representatives of their choice. Third, districts must be drawn contiguously so that all parts of the district are connected to each other. Fourth, and this is kind of the heart of the matter, districts must minimize the division of counties, cities, neighborhoods, and communities of interest to the extent possible. To the extent possible, without violating any of the three preceding criteria. It's also important to note that within criterion four, counties, cities, neighborhoods, and communities of interest are treated equally. There is no prioritization established in the California State Constitution. So if we find ourselves facing a situation where we have a choice between dividing a community of interest and dividing a city, it's up to us. That's not established in the state constitution which way we have to go on a decision like that. Fifth, districts should be geographically compact so that nearby areas of population are not bypassed for more distant populations. If we're looking to add population to a district to bring it up to the target population, we need to bring that population from as close by as possible rather than going a greater distance. And finally, where practical, each Senate district should consist of two complete and adjacent assembly districts. And Board of Equalization districts should consist of 10 complete and adjacent state Senate districts. Again, this is criterion six. It's the last in the list. We will do our best, but we have to comply with the five previous criteria before we can focus too much attention on number six. In addition, the place of residence of any incumbent or political candidate may not be considered in the creation of a map. Also, districts may not be drawn for the purpose of favoring or discriminating against any incumbent, any political candidate, or any political party. Next slide. We're defining communities of interest as a concentrated population that shares common social and economic interests that should be included within a single district for purposes of effective and fair representation. There are many different examples. Just some of them are cultural communities of interest, areas in which people share similar living standards or similar work opportunities, areas in which people use the same transportation facilities or have access to the same media. Given those examples, I hope it's clear that people can actually belong to multiple communities of interest. We also recognize that a person's community of interest might be different depending on whether we're talking about U.S. House of Representatives or State Assembly. There are some things that are focused on in Washington rather than Sacramento and vice versa. So people's communities of interest can vary depending on what office we're talking about. Also want to highlight that communities of interest are not the same as a district. They are key building blocks of districts. Next slide. So there are a number of ways to define your communities of interest. Creating maps is important, but we also don't want creating a map to be a barrier. If someone is not comfortable drawing a map, either by hand or using an online tool, as long as they tell us what the boundaries are, we'll find someone to draw the map for them. People can tell us about their communities of interest through oral testimony. At these communities of interest input sessions that are starting later this week, they can write us by email or postal mail and tell us about their communities of interest. Communities often get involved in redistricting because they feel that their issues have not been adequately addressed by their elected representatives. Next slide. So ways to provide input. We've actually made more than 100 of these California redistricting basics presentations so far to groups around the state. Thanks to the mayor of Palm Desert for arranging one of those. This presentation is also available in video form on our YouTube channel and our website. After these education sessions, we will begin holding public input sessions starting the 10th this week, accepting public input on communities of interest. But folks don't have to wait until those come around to provide communities of interest. We have a new online communities of interest mapping tool at drawmycacommunity.org. We already have several hundred submissions through that new portal, and we encourage folks to make their communities aware of this portal and generate interest in contributing communities of interest input through the mapping tool. We will also be making that tool available in paper form with prepaid postage. Hope to get it into libraries throughout the state, so keep an eye open for those. There are also instructions on providing communities of interest on our website. We draw the lines ca.org. This is our new website for the 2020 commission. If you go to wedrawthelines.ca.gov, you'll end up at a homepage that is for the 2010 commission. There is a link to the new site from there, but the .org is our website for the 2020 commission. We take input by email to votersfirstact@crc.ca.gov. By telephone, our main number in Sacramento is 916-323-0323. And our postal address in Sacramento is 721 Capitol Mall, Suite 260, Sacramento 95814. Next slide. We are but one of many redistricting efforts going on in the state this year. I'm sure you're all very aware of that. We are responsible for the U.S. House of Representatives, State Senate, State Assembly, and State Board of Equalization districts. That's a total of 176 districts that we have to draw. Counties will be doing their own redistricting. Many cities will be doing their own school districts, water districts, community college districts. We're not responsible for those others. If someone shows up at a County Board of Supervisors redistricting session and wants to talk about their state assembly district, hopefully the County Board of Supervisors will refer that person to us. Likewise, if someone shows up at one of our events wanting to talk about city council redistricting, we will try to put them in touch with the right folks with the city. Next slide. So this is who we are, 14 of us, eight selected through random draws in July of last year. The eight of us then sat down, reviewed the remaining candidates and agreed on a slate of six to bring us to full strength of 14 members. There are seven from Northern California, seven from Southern California, eight women, six men. We range in ages from our 30s to our 60s. We have NGO leaders, engineers, pastors, law enforcement officers, political scientists, public servants, and a lawyer in our midst. Our meetings are held online for now. There's a link on our meetings tab on our website. Everyone is welcome to join us through that link on our website. Next slide. Language access is very important to the commissioners. We've taken a number of steps to ensure that Californians will be able to participate in the process. We have translated our flyer, our fact sheet, our frequently asked questions. This presentation, as well as script for it. Written public comment can be sent to us in any format, in any language, and will be translated for the commissioners. And if anyone needs an interpreter to participate in any of our meetings or events, we just ask that they notify us 5 business days prior to that event, and we will attempt to contract an interpreter in the requested language. The languages that we have translated, both the online communities of interest tool as well as these printed materials, include Spanish, simplified Chinese, traditional Chinese, Vietnamese, Tagalog, Korean, Armenian, Farsi, Arabic, Russian, Japanese, Punjabi, and Khmer. Next slide. The California State Constitution establishes an August 15th deadline for us to submit our new maps. As everyone is aware, the census was delayed. The release of census results has been delayed by a number of months. Fortunately for us, the state legislature last year filed suit in the California Supreme Court seeking an extension of the deadline. The Supreme Court ruled on July 17th last year that we should have until December 15th to submit our final maps to the Secretary of State, assuming that the data would be received by July 31st. They further ruled that if the data are not received by July 31st, which the Census Bureau has indicated will not be the case, then our deadline is automatically adjusted by the same number of days as whatever additional delay beyond July 31st. So for example, if we get census data, the redistricting data 2 weeks after July 31st, then our final deadline to submit maps to the Secretary of State would be 2 weeks after December 15th. Next slide. Just a reminder, no public input on the lines today. Next slide. Is our contact information again, mailing address, the Voters First Act at crc.ca.gov, email address, the website address, and our social media at WeDrawTheLineCA. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy, for your update on the redistricting. I appreciate your volunteering, and thank you for the very informative slide presentation. So thank you very much. We'll take that information item.
If I can add one last thing, these communities of interest input sessions, we're starting with statewide focus on the 10th and the 19th of June. We will have our first session focusing specifically on Riverside and San Bernardino counties on Thursday, June 24th.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your input and your presentation. All right, we'll move on to item B now, which is Executive Director Employment Contract. Mr. Jenkins, our attorney, will be handling this for us and is to discuss and take possible action on the amendment to the Executive Director's Employment Contract. Mr. Jenkins?
Chair Miller, members of the committee, for your consideration and approval this afternoon, I present you with an amendment to the 2018 Employment Agreement between CVAG and the Executive Director, Tom Kirk. The amendment revises the 2018 agreement in the following ways. 2018 agreement had a 5-year term, is currently scheduled to expire on May 30th, 2024. This amendment would extend the term by 2 years and 1 month, extending the expiration date to June 30, 2026. In other words, an additional 5 years from now. The first amendment would increase Mr. Kirk's annual salary from $229,412 to $290,000, effective July 1, 2021. Annual cost of living adjustments would be automatic unless determined otherwise by the admin personnel committee. The First Amendment would increase deferred compensation in the current agreement from $2,936 per year to the maximum allowed by IRS regulations, which in 2021 would be $26,000 per year. The First Amendment would add that there would be an annual performance evaluation for Mr. Kirk. All other provisions of the employment agreement would remain the same, including the provision that Mr. Kirk does not intend to resign his employment during the agreement's 5-year term. That concludes my report, Mr. Chair. I'll be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Before I let the rest of the members speak, I'm gonna see if the public comments are out there. Joanna, is there anybody that has sent in any written comments or anybody on Zoom that would like to speak on this item?
I don't see any raised hands, Mr. Chair, and we have not received any other comments.
Thank you very much. So I will open the floor up to Christy if she'd like to take it, considering she was on the committee with me that talked to Mr. Kirk. And then the rest of you can, if you want to raise your hand or unmic, and we'll go through you as you come through. So Christy?
Thank you, Chair. I have nothing to add to your report.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody here that has any discussions that would like to talk about this, the contract extension for Mr. Kirk, or has any questions or concerns? Please come up. Mr. Hernandez, I see that you're on mic, sir.
Nothing to add other than to say that I think we're being well served by Mr. Kirk. He's, he's been at it for quite some time now, and, look at what we've got coming our way. You know, a lot of good money coming into the desert, and we're going to need an experienced administrator to get those projects on the street and done.
Thank you, Mr. Hernandez. I see Supervisor Perez, and then we'll go to Ms. Evans.
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay, let's let Ms. Evans do it, and we'll let you do the motion next. Ms. Evans?
Sure, just real quickly, I think I've probably been on the admin personnel committee maybe the longest, just based on, being voluntold. I can say that we had a lengthy discussion this time around regarding this matter, and recognizing that really Tom hasn't accepted increases to his salary, with the exception in the early years of the COLA that is entitled to his position just as it is for all of the employees of CVAG. And there was a time specifically last year that the admin personnel committee did not grant the COLAs for the staff, which included then Tom's. And, I'll say that I did a slap on the hand saying shame on him for being the good soldier and not taking increases for a variety of reasons during different times of his term as CEO of CVAG, but recognizing the compensation analysis and survey of other entities that are similar to what CVAG represents, in knowing the depth of experience and the number of projects that we have. This is not a time that we can afford to lose the expertise. And the sheer fact of even recruiting somebody new would be clearly at a comparable salary of what we're proposing here and would have a lot of training to do. And that's not a good investment in my feeling is. And so, you know, as Mayor Hernandez said, we do have a windfall coming our way. We have been very fortunate with the leadership, even in the controversial times, and I completely support needing to move up to a more competitive range for him, for the work that he has done. And knowing that, again, the COLA piece that's part of this is in line with what the rest of the employee group does. So as that might change, this would change as well, but I definitely support the decision going forward.
Well said, Ms. Evans. Anyone else would like to speak on this matter? We do have the supervisor that's looking to make a motion. If anybody
I'll second, looking to second the motion.
Okay, we have a first second. Anyone else like to speak? Okay, so we'll move on. We have a first and a second, Supervisor Perez, a second by the City of La Quinta. I think we'll just all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed or abstain? All right. Thank you, Mr. Kirk. Passes unanimously. We'll look forward to another 5 years, and it's a great opportunity for us with the new committees and the new funding come in to continue to make our valley even greater. So with that, we'll move on to item number C, which is the proposed CVAG 2021-2022 budget. Mr. Kilgore, you're handling this for us, sir.
I am, Chairman. Thank you. We'll get the screen started here. Well, my new favorite subject, the CVAG budget. We'll try to get through it quickly. It is really interesting, but I do appreciate your attention and time today. And we're gonna highlight the few areas we'll touch this evening. First, we'll give an update on some of the Personnel and Finance Committee happenings. We'll look at the operating budget highlights, mostly administration items there. And then finally, we'll look at some agency-wide and program highlights for the CVAG budget. At the end or during, I'm happy to take any questions you might have, and you can always follow up after this meeting, because this is a draft budget. You know, this is my first time through it. It was a lot of, I have long hair and I still have long hair. There's hair pulling, but we made it through with the help of our CVAG staff, our executive director's direction, and of course, the personnel and finance committees have, I wouldn't say we went through the ringer with them, but we definitely talked a lot about budget with both of those committees. So with that, I think we'll move on and discuss the Personnel and Finance Committee updates. And, I really can't do that without thanking the Finance and Personnel Committee. So I do want to take a moment and thank both of these committees. It's basically a voluntold position, as Chairwoman Evans just mentioned. So I really want to express my gratitude to the Finance Committee. So I'm going to call you out. If you're here, I'd ask you to stand up and I'd clap for you. But no, I'm doing that right along with you. So thank you, Chair Linda Evans. She's been on our Finance Committee running a great meeting, as I'm sure you all know, and Vice Chair Richard Blocco. We have the City Manager from Desert Hot Springs on the Finance Committee. That's Mr. Luke Rainey. Of course, Mr. Isaiah Hagerman over at Rancho Mirage. Council Member Sabby Jonathan from Palm Desert also sits on the committee, and Miss Nancy Pauly over at Palm Springs as well. So just thank you all again for your time and effort and really results on the committees. And then real quick shout out to our Admin Personnel Committee. We have Chair Miller. Appreciate your time serving as a chair of that committee. Mayor Holstage from Palm Springs also sits there as a vice chair. A shout out to Mayor Mattis from Desert Hot Springs, Mayor Hernandez from Coachella, Tribal Chairman Groovy. Thank you for being on that committee as well, and Mayor Evans. Really appreciate all of your time. And again, just one more big thank you. Being new to the role here, it's quite a relief knowing not only I have direction of Tom Kirk and other staff like Joanna and Erica to guide me, who've been here for a long time, and our finance committee. I can sleep well knowing we have a final check going through admin personnel committees. And I really, really mean that from the bottom of my heart. So thank you for serving on that. And let's go on to the fun stuff. So CalPERS, I'm sure you're all aware, CalPERS is California Public Employers Retirement System, Employee Retirement System. And in 1920, a really prudent and good decision was made at the admin committee level, I believe, or it could have been the finance committee. But the plan, CVAG had a little over $2 million unfunded accrued liability, the UAL, they call it at CalPERS, which is probably a lot smaller than some of your cities incur, but it's quite sizable for our organization. So a smart decision was to pay that UAL down over a period of 10 years to get that to zero. And we're hoping to get there by 2030 or so. And we paid $1 million down out of our general fund in 1920. And we're looking for consistent close to $200,000 payments to get that down to zero. And we have budgeted for and went through committee with about a $204,000 payment in the upcoming year. So that's one big happening on the CalPERS side. We're happy to pay that down. And with that, you know, we'll be getting a new valuation reports. I believe next month they come out. So, you know, I'll be updating any of the committees at our next meeting once we get those new valuation reports in. So that's that on the CalPERS side. And, you know, I wanted to point out on the next slide that we really are looking at ways we can also kind of maneuver financially with maybe a bigger toolbox. And, you know, I've had conversations with our finance and admin committees. And, you know, I'm going to be working with some of like Miss Nancy Pauly has volunteered to help us walk through some of these tools we can add to our tool chest. One of those being a Section 115. The IRS offers a Section 115 trust where we can kind of get a little better return, maybe bootstrap those payments for later down the road. If there's a rainy day when the funds aren't doing so good, we can pull from there. So just wanted to point out that hopefully in the future, we'll be changing our investment policy to get some more tools in our financial toolbox. All right, well, let's move on and talk about some other things we discussed at the Finance and Admin Personnel Committee meetings, and that has to do with the membership dues and salary schedule, which are both tied to the COLA, as Mayor Evans was just mentioning. And I do want to remind everyone that COLA stands for the Cost of Living Adjustment. And now that's tied to the Consumer Price Index, the CPI. So the CPI is based on regions all throughout the nation. And in 2018, actually, they carved out a little San Bernardino, Ontario, Riverside COLA district. And so that's what we follow. That's a January to January annual percentage adjustment for cost of living, wages, things like that. So we did discuss at the committee a range of options related to this COLA increase. I think we looked at a 0% COLA, which was done in the prior year. And we looked at a couple other options, higher and lower. And the committee, both of them agreed and recommended a 2.2% COLA increase, again, tied to that CPI index for this area that I mentioned. And see that 2.2 COLA increase goes to the membership dues, and it also goes to the salary schedule. So that's on the base of the membership dues, and those were both approved. So in the budget, we built to our salary schedule a 2.2% increase for the staff here, as well as the membership dues on the base rate. And just for a note on the membership dues, I think that increased the revenue for the agency by about $10,000. And I think there was about 9,000 more in membership dues we're expecting pending the JPA finalization for the 29 Palms Band of, I believe, Mission Indians they are. So that's where we netted out with the COLAs. And we also discussed how we are having increased staffing since the last budgeted year. Now, five of those staff that will pop up in green here, five of those were with our CV Housing First program, which were already kind of went through mid-year through the executive committee. And of those five CV Housing First team members that are really only approved for 1 year, two of those are completely covered by grants. Now, the other three are covered by funding for that program, but two are straight up grants. And then the sixth additional staffing position we're hoping to have is related to, I believe it was item I on the consent calendar, you know, the CVCC, we had the administration contract for, and, you know, they're really shifting with land acquisition and also management monitoring. There's a lot more land there. So we're adding a new staff that will completely be covered by that agreement as well. So that's what we're looking at with the staffing increases there. And on the next slide, I was going to talk about the operating budget highlights. So let's run through that real quick because that's pretty fun. So the operating budget, our expenditures, we're budgeting about $900,000 in expenditures through the admin fund or 101 fund, the general fund that is. And that's actually represents a decrease from the prior year's operating expenditures. I think that decrease is about 11.25%. So we're looking at operating budget expenditures actually going down by about 11% this year. And I know some of you might have the same question that Mr. Kirk had when I was presenting the budget to him. And that is, well, if you're adding all these new staff, how is your operating budget going down? Well, we kind of just got the answer in our last slide. There's an inverse relationship by these other programs. You know, they're growing and growing. They're getting a larger percentage of the allocated expenditures. So that's kind of how that worked out to be less, even though we're hiring more staff. So we answered our question there. And with our operating budget, we're looking to net about $72,000. That's going to be excess of 4.8% from the prior year, which is looking to bring our general fund balance back up to about $1,570,000. At the end of the year, which is substantial because I mentioned we had to pay $1 million out of the general fund. So we are looking to build our reserves back up there. So every little bit helps, and especially $72,000 that we're budgeting does there. So we can just move on to our next slide and talk about agency and program-wide highlights. Real quick, two of our smaller programs that are still multi-million-dollar programs are our energy environment and the community resources program. So if you can see, this is our budgeted revenue compared to last year. This year's in the green on top. We are looking for basically stable revenue in both of those programs. Energy environment, as I'm sure you recall, if you don't sit on the committee, they do things like used tire recycling, oil grants, the COLMAC and street sweeping programs like that. And then you'll notice our community resources. Obviously, the biggest program there now is our CB Housing First, which is in-house. And you know, we budgeted aggressively on the revenue side there, expecting each of our member jurisdictions to, you know, really contribute their fair share to the homeless issue in the Coachella Valley. So we're looking forward to having that program in-house and continuing to do good things with it. So we'll move to the next graph, which is a little scaled differently, just because there's obviously the most money's coming in from transportation that fuels our agency-wide revenues. And you might notice that we're projecting less revenues than the prior year. It looks like a ton. It is a lot different in the revenue estimate side, but really that has to do with the bridge funding. I think in prior years, there was a heavy expectation of all this bridge funding coming in for all these capital projects around the valley. A lot of times that wouldn't come to fruition. So we actually pegged our transportation revenues coming in with our cash flow projections over the next few years. So you should see that match up as well. And I can just quickly overview some of the major revenue sources by category here is obviously we're going to have a lot of federal grants. I believe the CMAC and some of those programs, I believe there's some ATP money that's also federal. We have Measure A, obviously our half cent sales tax that's been sustaining CVAG since way before I joined. And of course we get money from TUMP, and we have some state grants with the STIP program and other revenues there. And our local contributions, again, our homelessness programs are getting a lot of local contributions from the cities here. So appreciate that. And well, we can just talk about expenditures real quick, because that's really the other side of this equation, right? Your revenue, your expenditures, you get your excess, and then that goes to increase or decrease your fund balance. So our expenditures for the year, again, energy, environment, community resources are two smaller yet multi-million-dollar programs, are projecting to be relatively stable on the expenditure side. And in fact, you'll take note that on the community resources, we've brought that program in-house and got to commend that program, because even with it being in-house, we're looking to save on expenditures from the prior year. So that's some of the highlights of those two programs. And I just want to point out, again, the scaling's a little off. Obviously, transportation's a big driver of expenditures again. And you can see our project cost and is a big part of that. We've taken on and really launching the CV Link and the CV Sync. And those are really internal programs, unlike any other agency that I know of in California or the country. So we are looking for a lot of expenditures related to those programs, which I can highlight on the next page where those come in at. And like I mentioned, a lot of that's construction costs. No surprise, right? And we'll see that we run a tight ship on our personnel. Even, you know, we hire more consultants and service providers than we do new employees. So I know that's something Mr. Kirk's definitely instilled in me in a finance role is the importance of that. So I think that's really the highlights of the revenue and expenditure side. And again, that's a draft budget, and it will have to go through the honored, revered General Assembly at the end of the month, and again through Executive Committee as well. So at this time, I don't think it's a formal voting recommendation. It's more, please review the budget. If you have any comments to include, like we have with the Finance Committee or anyone else, please send them my way, ask them now, and we'll get this up and going and look to improve it year on year.
Thank you, Mr. Kilgore. Mr. Kirk, I see you're got unmiked.
Yeah, Chair Miller, that's a good opportunity to provide a little bit of additional good information. And if I had provided any more good information at the beginning of the meeting, you thought I might try to get votes for the last item on the agenda. So I decided to hold off a little bit. And that bit of information is on our Housing First program. As you know, I've been making the rounds to all the cities and the healthcare district. We've gotten a lot of strong support financially and certainly politically for our Housing First program. And the latest to do that is from Mayor Bulacco's own City of Indian Wells, where I was about 3 minutes into the presentation, and I think the mayor called for a vote and it was unanimous there. So we're expecting a $100,000 contribution from the City of Indian Wells for the Housing First program. And we may have a unanimous support for the program and continue to show progress and helping the homeless and helping our cities relieve themselves of the burden of homelessness. So it's good news.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. Always great things coming on. Any questions or concerns, Mr. Kilgore? And then obviously you can always email him or Mr. Kirk with any ideas or thoughts. Does anybody want to make any comments on this? It's really a, oh, Mr. Hernandez, go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Mr. Kilgore for his effort in putting together this being his first budget. I appreciate and love the enthusiasm and the approach that you're taking. You know, you're a young guy, and so I see a lot of upside in the work you're doing. I just want to thank you for just bringing that energy to your presentation. I appreciate you.
And thank you, Mayor Hernandez. I couldn't do it without all of you, so really mean that.
Blanco, I see that you're unmiked. Did you want to say something, sir?
Oh, no, I was just going to thank Tom. Tom made a nice presentation at the city. I had gone out in advance and met with Tom to learn more about the program. I think, you know, after Tom explained it to me, you know, it was a no-brainer for me. And obviously my colleagues on the council agree. So good job, Tom. Thanks.
Very nice. Appreciate it. Ms. Evans, go ahead.
Sure. I'll just echo some of what Mayor Hernandez said with Claude and the approach and enthusiasm. You know, we talked in some subcommittees about needing to modernize to a certain degree. We had solid finance in the past, but some of it was old school and it was time to kind of modernize and streamline certain things and provide adequate safeguards going forward with our new digital world. So I know he and Tom have spent a lot of time together, and there's a few little areas of tweaking to do just for clarification purposes. Some of the input from the committee was just questioning some of the smaller buckets of line items and how we can either clarify, make notes, or consolidate them so they're a little bit more understandable. But overall, knowing that not only have we got new finance leadership, he's also, as the next item will show, that we're changing auditors again for the first time in a long time. So, you know, sometimes, you know, change is you got to jump in with both feet, and clearly Claude has done a that and appreciate the effort. So it's enjoyable working with you. Thank you.
Yes, I feel the same, Mayor Evans. And you can't, what is the saying? You have to jump in to get your feet wet or something like that. So I'm all on board.
We appreciate it. I'm surprised you got all out without taking a breath too.
Whew. Well, I got my water down here.
Good. Well, we appreciate it, Mayor Evans. Thank you for your leadership on the Finance Committee. This is exciting stuff that's going on here in the Coachella Valley with the grants and everything from the homeless new committee we have and everything else, the Housing First. So thank you for that leadership. And Mr. Kilgore, thank you. I don't see anybody else wishing to speak. I do want everybody to know, since the discussion and action items, Supervisor Hewitt has also been with us. So just so that record reflects that. And we'll move now on to item D. It's the selection of CVAG, CBCC, and DCE independent auditor. Mr. Kilgore, it's you again, sir.
Sure. Well, this will be a real quick one. Let's see. We opened up an RFP process because we do have a five-year limit on the independent financial statement auditor here at CVAG. It did have to go through a six-year last year to catch, I believe it was to catch DCE with the same auditor. So it's time to rotate. That decision was made. We opened the RFP process in March. So mid-March, we opened that and we gave it about 4 weeks there. And we had six highly qualified proposals, anywhere from here up to, I think we had people proposing from Bakersfield. And myself with the finance staff sifted through these six, and we got input from the CVCC Finance Committee member, Kevin McCarthy from the City of Indian Wells. So there was three of us on the initial panel to select the interview panel, and we all, by unanimous decision, chose the top three. So it just worked out that way. Because I was like, oh, if we all don't choose the same three, how are we going to do it? But hey, we all chose the same three. And we moved to interview phase where Isaiah Hagerman from City of Rancho Mirage gave a surrogate in Kofi Antebaum, who's the Director of Administrative Services there for the City of Rancho Mirage. So Kofi, myself, and then the finance manager here, held interviews on May 5th, and we again came to a unanimous decision to select Davis Farr as the pending your approval to negotiate the contract as the new auditor. And, some things I'm really excited about, I think Mayor Evans hit it very well. It is kind of a fresh start. You know, I can ask them all the questions I have and work together to streamline things that we're looking to do. But not only that, they had some of the highest technical ingenuity, especially when it came to the community choice aggregator programs. The principal there, Jennifer Farr, she used to audit CVAG way back when she was at a different firm. So it worked well with some of her familiarity with the program and with the Conservation Commission. And, they're also big into data mining. As a former auditor, financial statement auditing used to be about samples and selecting invoices, but really big data is changing all that. And it should be more like analytics level, and they were the only firm to really present on big data and what they're doing to audit differently, and they just seem like the best fit. So with that, I do ask this committee to authorize the executive director to negotiate and execute a contract to hire Davis Farr to serve as our independent auditor of a CVAG and by default CVCC and DCE. So I will ask the committee to do that, please.
Kilgore, thank you. Ms. Evans, go ahead.
I say I'd like to make a motion. La Quinta, make a motion to approve.
Torres Martinez will second.
Torres Martinez, second. We have a first, second. Any other discussion? All right. Then all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Anyone oppose or abstain? All right. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Kilgore, for both your presentations. And we'll move on now to item number 8, which is information. There's items A through K. Look at them at your leisure. So that if you have any questions, please tell Mr. Kirk or Joanna, and we'll make any corrections. And then we'll move on to item 9, which is the legislative items. Ms. Erin Sassy is with us. She's going to give us an update. Ms. Sassy, take it away.
Great. Hi, thank you everyone for having me tonight. It's nice to see all of you. I know that you already got a little bit of a budget update from Tom in his presentation, so I'll just parlay off that a little bit. We know that the budget has to be passed by next Tuesday. What we think is going to happen is that they'll pass the framework of a budget and then take their time with the trailer bills And as you all know, the trailer bills is really what matters with the budget, because they'll just allocate pots of money, and the details of how those pots of money will be distributed is what's important. So we do have an ask in right now for $10 billion for cities. And I know that's broken down in $2 billion for direct and flexible state aid for cities. So basically that $2 billion would help cities that still have a deficit after the federal funds that are coming your way. So I know that that applies to some of you. I think it's really important for you to advocate for that $2 billion in particular. I don't know entirely how they would do it, but you would have to show that you still have a need for those funds. I know that we've been talking to our legislators about this. It does seem to resonate with them, but they definitely need to hear from all of you on how important that is. We also have an ask for $5 billion for homelessness and housing solutions. I know we've already discussed this a little bit on this call. One piece that was left out was the HAP funding. A lot of these funds are directed towards Project Home Key, which really isn't something that I think is going to be as helpful for our region. So I think in the conversations of we want funding for homelessness, we need to know that they need to understand that it needs to be distributed in a way that would be helpful for all of you. So be mindful of that. I know money is coming. I just don't know how it will be allocated and for what programs at this point. There's $3 billion that we're asking for broadband. It seems like there really is going to be funding for broadband. Once again, how exactly it will be allocated, how you'll be able to use it is going to be still worked out. So if you have ideas, definitely voice them to me, to your legislators. And then lastly, this item, it doesn't seem like it has a lot of traction, but it's really important. We're asking for $225 million to help with your costs for implementing the SB 1383 requirements. So I know you've all heard me talk about this. We've been asking for a delay. We've been unsuccessful in getting that delay. We did have a bill, AB 619, that's moving forward still, that would not give a delay, but at least at this point would delay penalties for you not being able to implement the 1383 requirements. So you should definitely support that. We have a support in concept just because the bill kept changing, but we have a sample letter on if you're interested in supporting that fund, but that is part of our budget ask also. So in your conversations with legislators, please, please, please be vocal. I know a lot of you have sent in letters and I appreciate that. On the housing front, there's several bills that are pretty bad that made it out of suspense moving forward. One is AB 215. This basically would require you to have a mid-cycle housing element consultation with HCD. And if you don't receive their pro-housing designation, basically you would be able to be, you'd be in violation and the Attorney General could come after you. So really bad bill. You should definitely be opposing it. I haven't seen very many letters on that. We're opposed. We have a sample letter. Another one that's along those lines is AB 989. This would establish a housing appeals committee. And basically it opens you up for litigation. So if you're not moving forward in an appropriate way, you would be open to litigation. So I know this is one that we've talked about a little bit. It creates a housing accountability committee. It's just removing your local control. Another really bad one. One that's going to be heard this week is SB 556. This is the streetlight poles, the one with the traffic poles. They could put the communication device. I know you've all been really opposed to this one. So this one's still moving forward. I see Linda. Yes.
This is the old 649, right?
Yeah.
649 or something.
Right.
When we were up in Sacramento for the league meeting. Yeah.
Yeah. This one is supposed to be heard on Wednesday.
Again, lack of local control.
Yeah, definitely think you should all be opposed and be vocal about that one. So there's a lot of other bills moving forward, but just keep reminding our legislators. I know we just met with a lot of them. I appreciate a lot of you joining those meetings. I think they were really good. I like that they listened, but you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? So we just can't really back off and we need to be vocal. With that, thank you for having me. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Sassy. Any questions to Ms. Sassy? And if you can, Aaron, if you could send us maybe some samples of those letters so you can get it out, just so everybody has it fresh, you know, and give us a little background on it, that'd probably help.
Yeah, definitely.
So any questions, Mr. Perez?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Aaron. Thank you for that. Can you list the authors of those three bills?
Yeah, so the SB 556 is Dodd. AB 215 is Chu. And the AB 989 is Gabriel.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
All right, any other questions to Ms. Sassy? Thank you, Aaron, for your continued update. We look forward to getting those letters. Move on to item 10 now, which is public comments and non-agenda items. Anything, Joanna, from non-agenda items?
We have not received any.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So we'll move on to number 11, the announcements. It's the next meeting of the executive committee will be held on Monday, June 28, 2021 here with the closed session of 4 and a regular session of 4:30. It is our general assembly, so it will be hopefully the last one Zoom. It will be starting at 6 o'clock on the 28th. So we'll be able to do that. And as usual, Farmer Joey will be providing from Blythe, will be providing us cantaloupes. I anticipate they will be coming to the CVAG office. So we want to thank Joey for his continued support of our food needs there and for his continued support of the farming industry. But thank you, Joey. I know you always have a timeshare during this time, but hopefully you can still make it because it is Zoom. We'd love to have you and look forward to seeing all of you at the next meeting. So we'll set this.
Mr. Chair, looks like Supervisor Hewitt has his hand up.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I have an announcement. I believe I'm the only one that's both on CVAG and WRCOG, and I ran late coming here because we had a really long closed session in WRCOG. But what came out of that was actually we do have now a new executive director at WRCOG that is Kurt Wilson. And he's a former Rialto city councilman. He also was a city manager for Stockton and when they had to bring him out of bankruptcy and such. So after all the things that we've had over the PACE program and the Western Communities Energy, the CCA that took it, filing for Chapter 9, he's gonna be maybe like bringing Red Adair in to cap off the oil wells or whatever, but anyway, that's the news there, and that's why I was late. But
thank you, Supervisor. Sorry about not seeing your hand up there, so I do apologize. Anyone else for the order of the good? If not, then we will stand adjourned at 5:37, and we'll see you all at the General Assembly. Be safe, and thank all of you.
See you guys later.